Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And, Jim, it's pretty rare for us to make predictions about elections where the Republicans actually exceed our predictions. We're usually fairly optimistic in the close races, but they actually overperformed against our predictions from back in November, because on Saturday, Bill Cassidy officially won the Louisiana Senate race. He won it about 57-43%, easily claiming victory over Mary Landrieu. She will leave office after three terms. And the fun part, Jim, is when there were half a dozen or more candidates in the race, Mary Landrieu got about 43%. When there were two candidates in the race, Mary Landrieu got about 43%.
Well, she knows her ceiling and she knows her floor. Actually, this is a slight underperformance for Bill Cassidy based on a few of the polls in the weeks ahead of time. We really didn't have any of the big name pollsters in there, a couple of Republican firms. Most people would happily enjoy a 12-point win.
Yes.
That's perfectly fine. And you put it very well. Other than New Hampshire, Republicans won just about every race that was winnable in the Senate, which is a serious feather in their cap. I think what's really intriguing is the way Democrats are responding to this. I mean, we kind of knew, first of all, she was denouncing the DSCC for basically giving up on her the moment the November elections came in. So this morning in the Daily Beast, Michael Tomasky, who's, kind of exactly what you'd expect over at the Daily Beast, writes, "With Mary Landrieu's ignominious exit, the Democrats will have lost their last senator in the Deep South. And it's a good thing. They should write it off because they don't need it." And then he writes about the reactionary, prejudice-infested place she comes from. He goes, "A toothless dog is a figure of sympathy. A vet who takes pleasure in gassing it is not. And that is what Louisiana and the entire South has become." He also makes a reference to the transracial community. And I'm really not sure how you change races. Democrats are responding to this defeat with exactly the high-mindedness, deep introspection, and seriousness we've come to expect from them. He goes, "Let the GOP have it and run it and turn it into free market Jesus paradise. The Democrats don't need it anyway." Well, you can't do that. First of all, they do still need Florida. Okay, that's kind of an important state down there. But they really are just like, if they didn't vote for us, they're all stupid and racist and we hate them. And we didn't even want your stupid votes anyway. Which, look, the more states they concede and say they don't necessarily want to compete. Look, the fact that Democrats have been losing ground in the South is nothing new. By the way, it's worth noting that for all the people who say, it's the legacy of the Civil Rights Act, the Democrats didn't start losing the South until like the 80s. All right, but this is a good, 20 years later. Kevin Williamson does a great piece on this. So it's not about race. It's about the ideological direction of the party, and that the South is largely a culturally conservative, generally more religious, generally more traditional value-oriented place. And the Democrats have decided that they're going to be the Obama, de Blasio, Elizabeth Warren party. And that just doesn't sell out there in the South. And I think that there's something to Tomasky's argument that Democrats have decided they don't really want to win this, that they've kind of decided that they think that part of the country is too stupid, which is why you find themselves periodically falling in love with the Wendy Davises of the world or the Alison Lunderton Grimes of the world. And then they underperform, then the voters go back to being stupid again. So the Democrats are throwing a tantrum, and we can just enjoy their delicious tears. Because they're good for you, Greg. They're full of nutrients.
I'm so confused, because apparently these people were enlightened in 2008 when they voted for Mary Landrieu and Mark Pryor and Kay Hagan, and North Carolina even voted for President Obama. So amazing how many stupid people moved into the state in just a very short period of time.
It all comes at once. It's very strange. It's a sudden shift.
Amazing. All right, on to the bad martini, and a much more sobering one. As many of you probably heard over the weekend, the United States military, in conjunction with some of our friends in the Middle East, did mount a mission to rescue American photojournalist Luke Summers, who was held by al-Qaeda. Sadly, he was killed by al-Qaeda during the rescue bid. A South African hostage was also killed, and that one is especially tough to swallow because apparently he was set to be released in some sort of a deal in just the next few days. So, Jim, when you look at this, obviously it's good that we're trying to get our people out. But when we fail in operations like this, it kind of reinforces the growing idea that we're not as powerful, especially in the region, but even around the world, as we were just a few years ago.
couple of thoughts I'm going to just, you know, put in here. And it's a sad martini. I don't know if we necessarily would call this necessarily a bad martini. One being that somebody said it was referred to as a botched rescue mission. And I don't, look, it's not botched. You know, our guys went out and did the very best they could. My understanding is that the, you know, once they lost the element of surprise and once the fight was on, the terrorists attempted to kill the hostages. They managed to get the two of them out. One died on the scene and one died on the way back. So it's not for lack of effort or something. Hostage rescue is probably one of the toughest things the military can possibly do. And sometimes you're going to have an unhappy ending. And somebody had made this observation on Twitter that, look, I would much rather see rescue attempts that don't work out than paying ransoms. Because when you pay ransoms, you get more of them. When guys know that if you abduct an Americans, the American, you know, special forces, our military is going to come after you. And maybe we rescue the hostages, maybe you don't. But getting to kill that hostage isn't going to make you feel much better once there's a Navy SEAL kicking down your door and hopefully, you know, blasting you to smithereens. So, you know, as sad as it is, there are worse scenarios to come out of this. And hopefully we will have a, you know, better stories to tell on this. There's something they can learn from this and apply to future attempts to rescue hostages.
Yeah, one of the very valuable things and one of the best traits of the United States is that every life matters. And that was on display here. And as you mentioned, even though we did not get the hostages, there was excellence on the part of our men and women in uniform. So, all right, on to the crazy martini now and on to another story that we really haven't touched in the three martini lunch. And that's the Rolling Stone article a while back on the supposed rape culture at the University of Virginia. It turns out the one person they centered this story around, her story started to fall apart on further scrutiny. One of the people who first raised concerns about the validity of her account was your boss, National Review editor Rich Lowry, a proud UVA grad himself. He was on the panel on ABC's This Week program with George Stephanopoulos, Van Jones, Matthew Dowd, and Loretta Sanchez. Van Jones tried to make the point that one of every five women on campus is the victim of a sexual assault, and Rich Lowry tried to tamp down that statistic, and then it led to all this.
That statistic is based on a survey that includes attempted forced kissing as sexual assault.
That is not a real
number. It's an advocacy.
Do you want
number.
Me to attempt? Well, can I not, kiss you? Can
well,
I kiss you here?
Let's talk about this later, man. It's not a crime that the police are going to be involved in and prosecute.
That's an assault. That is an assault.
That is a sexual assault.
So Van Jones asking Rich Lauer he could kiss him against his will. Jim, there's a lot of things you probably expect when you go on to a set for a major television program. I'm guessing that's not one of them.
Bring it, Van. You're a handsome man. You know, here's the thing. Because what's interesting, this kind of continues the theme I've been banging the drum on lately, which is the idea that narrative journalism actually, or I make air quotes as I do that. Narrative journalism as opposed to factual journalism usually ends up hurting the causes it claims to help or to support. Because here's the thing. If it really is true that one in five women on college campuses is sexually assaulted, then there are a lot of guys who should be getting arrested, prosecuted, and put behind bars. All right, let's not have any illusions. Let's not make any of these, you know, stupid arguments that somebody's pro-rape or somebody wants to see sexual assaults happen or these things go unpunished. However, when people hear the term sexual assault, they generally picture rape. A forced kiss or an unwanted kiss under the mistletoe or something like that. Look, you know, is that a crime? Is that just rude behavior? Is that boorish behavior? If we want to talk about this, it's worth it to have serious, accurate statistics and to get a sense of just how common this problem is. And if you really want to stop sexual assault on campus, I don't think you do your cause any good by broadening the definition to include almost anything of boorish behavior. You know, would at what point, you know, does it become the behavior described in that video of street harassment? Is that a form of sexual assault? I'm sure there are some feminists or some folks who would define that. And after that, it becomes silly putty. You just become stretching the term so much beyond it that it applies to anything. And on paper, everybody should be on the same side here. But if you wildly inflate the statistics in a basic kind of dishonesty there, people are going to object to it. People are going to be kind of upset by it. And the idea that Van Jones, if Van Jones really thinks that's a form of sexual assault, why is he threatening to do it on national television? It doesn't, you know, you can't argue on the one hand, well, I'm going to do this. You know, you can't argue this is harmful, that deserves legal prosecution, and then treat it so lightly that you say you're going to do it on right in front of television cameras. But they don't see the contradiction there. They're kind of high on their own self-righteousness. I think what's kind of fascinating is they can't see the damage that they are doing to their own alleged causes, although you kind of wonder maybe if their cause really is just a matter of self-promotion and saying that they're better than the people who disagree with them.
I feel bad for Rich at the NR Christmas party. He's going to get a lot of grief over this.
I mean, if everybody would just say, you know, Van Jones, kind of an overrated kisser. All that build up, anyway.
We'll leave it there. Rich is a good man. I won't go any further. Jim, have a good day. We'll talk again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.